It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics today, even though it is not Wednesday, it's Monday, the day after the second presidential debate. And if you watched or listened to last night's debate and were searching for words to describe it, I'm betting uplifting was not among the words you would put on your list. How about nasty? That might be one more suited to it. Could be said that this meeting had the highest stakes ever for any single debate, even as it set new lows for the level of personal attacks. This hour, we want to get two Iowa perspectives on the presidential debate. Doug Gross is with us, attorney with Brown Winnick in Des Moines. He's also a former GOP Iowa gubernatorial nominee. He ran for governor in 2002. Doug Gross, welcome to our program.
Yeah, good to be with you.
Kelly Winfrey is with us as well, assistant professor at the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University, also coordinator of research and outreach at ISU's Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics. Kelly, good to have you with us so we can see it through your lens.
Yes, thanks for having me, Ben.
We want to have you join us, our listeners, to River to River. Been having on Facebook a bit of a conversation. If you'd like to go there in six words or less, we're asking you to tell us what you saw or heard in last night's debate. Quite colorful answers already on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. You can check those out. I'll read a few of them a little bit later. Also, undecided voters, did anything you saw last night change your mind? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, as I mentioned, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. First of all, through your respective lenses, I'd like to have you react to what you saw last night. Kelly Winfrey, go first. As a professor of journalism and also someone who's active there at the Center for Women in Politics at ISU.
Well, Ben, you know, I think the best way to describe the debate was nasty, disappointing. It really wasn't a good debate in terms of actual discussions of policy positions from either candidate, really. A lot of personal attacks that really didn't further anyone's campaign strategy. I think, you know, a lot of the attacks that are being made are, if they're going to hold any water with anyone, they already do. And so I don't really think it did anything to change anyone's opinions about who they're going to vote for. In fact, it probably just cemented people's existing opinions on the candidates.
Mm-hmm. Doug Gross, your view?
I thought it was sad that our democracy has gotten to this level where I thought I would put on the wrong channel. I thought I was watching Sunday Night Football.
Right.
It was really sad. It was so uncivil, so unenlightening, and so negative that it can't help but harm our democracy and our republic.
Mm-hmm. I spoke with several people, and the consensus seems to be that regardless of your partisan views, people just felt sick of it and couldn't wait for it to be over, Doug?
Yeah, I was very pleased when it was over. I thought it was nice, at least the last question, they found something positive to say about one another, which was remarkable in and of itself. It was probably the one piece of news coming out of the debate. But it was extremely negative. Trump clearly felt that he needed to go on the attack, needed to attack Clinton in the way he hadn't in the previous debate. Yet he was reacting to a terrible tape that came out on Friday evening. She was reacting to a set of emails that came out that made her look duplicitous. So all in all, it was a very defensive and negative debate.
Mm-hmm. And add to that, Trump pulling this sort of media stunt just before the debate, having an impromptu news conference on Facebook Live, flanked by four women. Three had accused Bill Clinton of assaulting them in the past, one as far back as 1978. The fourth had objected to the way Hillary Clinton, when she was a court-appointed attorney, had once defended the man accused of raping her when she was 13. All of these stories were the subject of extensive reporting when Bill Clinton was president back in the 90s. But anyway, Doug, what is your take on that's unprecedented, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally unprecedented. It's clearly the line between reality TV and political theater has been crossed and it's been blurred and it no longer exists. It was like the Breitbart reality TV show. And we're here to decide who should lead our country and in many respects our world. And we need to decide what kind of a person you are, but importantly, we also need to decide where you are on key issues that face our country and key policy decisions that have to be made at a time when the world is extremely dangerous. And instead, we spent most of the time in the sewer. And to do that, to have that kind of a news conference an hour before, when you lure the reporters in by saying you're going to show people how you're preparing for the debate. Well, indeed, that's how he was preparing for the debate, by deciding how low he could go.
Mm-hmm. Kelly Winfrey, you study the media. What do you think about that impromptu news conference, so to speak?
I mean, I completely agree with Doug. It's the kind of disgusting elements of reality television that have taken over the presidential campaign. And, you know, as someone who studies gender issues, it's frustrating to me, particularly bringing up issues that are related to Bill Clinton and you know, trying to force Hillary to defend those things whenever he could be talking about real issues. I think, you know, he had an opportunity to show that he could be a serious presidential candidate if he came in and talked about issues and demonstrated a temperament that would be presidential. And instead, he started things off with this ridiculous press conference that just, I mean, really set the tone, I think, for the debate in terms of how nasty and personal it was.
Right. Even before a word was spoken by either of the candidates, we knew something was up. They approached each other mid-stage, no handshake. They just stayed several feet apart. I think there was a handshake at the end from what I read about later today. Well, however unpleasant, let's look at what had top billing as far as the topics in the debate last night. The big question going into this debate, how would Trump deal with the fallout from that videotape from 2005 released Friday, in which he bragged about treating women in ways that amount to sexual assault? Here's Anderson Cooper referencing the comments Trump made in 2005 and Trump's response.
You brag that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly I'm not proud of it, but this is locker room talk.
Okay, and here is Clinton's response shortly thereafter.
What we all saw and heard on Friday was Donald talking about women, what he thinks about women, what he does to women, and he has said that the video doesn't represent who he is, but I think it's clear to anyone who heard it that it represents exactly who he is, because we've seen this throughout the campaign.
Okay. Donald Trump says it's just locker room talk. Don't make too much of it. It's just words, Doug Gross. What do you think of Donald Trump's handling when confronted with that?
I didn't think he did a very good job of handling that. But frankly, I don't know how you can handle something where you're quoted on tape as saying such disgusting filth. That clearly does amount to sexual assault. I thought he seemed off his game at the beginning of the debate. I thought that really, he knew it was coming, yet at the same time he had a very difficult time doing it. Just parenthetically, I thought the moderators did an incredible job. They were tough, smart, focused, and tried to hold both candidates to the questions. So if there was one star coming out of the debates, it seemed to me it was Martha Raddatz and Anderson Cooper.
Mm-hmm. From your media lens there, Kelly Winfrey, would you say the moderators did some of the best jobs we've seen in any of these debates?
Yeah, I mean, they had a very difficult job,
right.
trying to get the candidates to answer questions, to get them to sort of adhere to time limits. But I do think that they did press in both candidates to answer some difficult questions and got them back on track. But I also want to comment on this, the locker room statement. It really kind of infuriated me because his apology wasn't really an apology. It was kind of like, oh, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. And, you know, I think later in the debate, he talks about how words matter, you know, when they're coming from Hillary Clinton or from Barack Obama. You know, and I've talked to a lot of people about this since the tape came out, and everyone I know said, I've been in a lot of locker rooms and I've never heard anything like that before. And so I think it's problematic to say, you know, it's to excuse that sort of talk just because he's chalking it up to, you know, it's locker room talk.
At the same time, Kelly and Doug, we do have on Morning Edition this morning, we have plenty of Donald Trump supporters, women as well, supporting Donald Trump and saying, I'm not going to measure him on this. Doug.
Yeah, I think the political part of the debate is interesting in that it was clear that what Donald Trump felt he needed to do is resolve that tape and other things that have been occurring since the last debate was try to reassure his base. And so that's what he did. I mean, he was more Donald than he's ever been in that debate. And yet, when if he really wants to win the election, he's got to reach out to both wavering Republicans and independent voters and reassure them that he has the temperament, the character, the personality, and the policies to lead our country. And he didn't do that. Instead, he just really revved up the base. And as a result, as Donald Trump said, I think when he was in Pella here in December of a year ago, he could fire a gun on Fifth mm-hmm. Avenue and the voters would still be with him, shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, his voters would still be with him. Those voters he reassured last night, and there's probably 40% of them out there, but the last time I looked, 40% doesn't win elections.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to a little bit of the debate and remind our listeners in six words or less, tell us what you saw or heard last night on the debate. Go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. A few of the six-word commentaries last night. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, we lose. That's from Matt. Jonathan, oh my, this election. Michael saying bombs bursting on air, trying to take our national anthem there to a little bit of a difference. Pamela saying, give me another choice, please. So a lot of disappointment, disgust registered in our listeners, at least on Facebook at this point. Let's listen to a little bit, some excerpts more of the clips, some clips from last night's debate, because tremendous amount of things discussed. This is an area that was discussed last night, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and a discussion about Obamacare. Anderson Cooper confronted Hillary Clinton about comments her husband made these past few days.
Secretary Clinton, let me follow up with you. Your husband called Obamacare, quote, the craziest thing in the world, saying that small business owners are getting killed as premiums double, coverage is cut in half. Was he mistaken, or was his mistake simply telling the truth?
No, I mean, he clarified what he meant, and it's very clear. Look, we are in a situation in our country where if we were to start all over again, we might come up with a different system. But we have an employer-based system. That's where the vast majority of people get their health care. And the Affordable Care Act was meant to try to fill the gap.
Okay, Doug Gross, we didn't hear Donald Trump there, but is Hillary Clinton vulnerable still on Obamacare?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, just as the election's occurring, premiums are going up for many people pretty dramatically. And frankly, Obamacare is like the most socially over-engineered public-private sort of system, Rube Goldberg machine I've never been known to man. And it's falling sort of on its own weight. So clearly it has to be changed. And on that score, I think, you know, Donald Trump did just fine, because I think she has high vulnerabilities with regard to that, particularly given her long history with trying to engineer a similar type system when she was first lady.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about some of the fallout. We heard even more of it at the top of the hour news. Paul Ryan, House Speaker, not campaigning for Donald Trump, not going to defend him up into the election. Doug Gross, he's not unendorsing Donald Trump, but he is not campaigning for him, not defending him. Talk a little bit about the position here that GOP leaders find themselves in across the country.
Yeah, they're all walking a tightrope. I mean, you saw on Saturday a number of them in swing districts unendorsed him or indicated they were not going to support him because they felt his vulnerabilities were too high. And yet other leaders like Paul Ryan, Paul is as principled and as a focused Republican as I know, a very, very good man, and he's on policy positions probably disagrees with Donald Trump on at least two out of every three key policy positions that he has, trade and taxes being a couple of examples. And so it's very difficult for Paul Ryan to be supportive of that nominee, yet at the same time, he's the Speaker of the House. And as Speaker of the House, he's responsible for all of his members and trying to retain the majority for Republicans in the U.S. Congress. And so as a result, if he simply disses and disavows the nominee, the turnout for Republicans could go down dramatically, and he could lose a lot of House members.
You know,
so he's caught betwixt and between. It's a very difficult situation for him.
Kelly, jump in there.
Yeah, I think that's exactly, it's a very difficult situation for him. I feel bad for the guy. But, you know, I think focusing on those down ballot races is what Republicans need to do if they're going to have success in their congressional races, because, you know, being tied to Donald Trump seems like you got a, you know, I got some lead shoes on there. So it really, I think, benefits Republican candidates in most districts probably to distance themselves as much as they can from Trump and to maybe have more of a strategy of we need to maintain control of the House in, you know, when Hillary Clinton is president, because, you know, Trump's got a tough battle ahead.
Mm-hmm. What I've heard both of you say on this in the last couple of minutes is purely out of sort of a campaign strategist's viewpoint here. Are there, Doug, any politicians out there who, well, you said Paul Ryan was principled, who will not look at the political calculation when something like this happens and just say, I cannot endorse this person, I cannot support this person?
Well, I think we saw Ben Sasse in Nebraska. You know, there's a strong, I suspect Trump will win Nebraska no matter what, mm-hmm. no matter what he says or does. Yet Ben Sasse in Nebraska has been the leader of the Never Trump movement since day one. He's a senator, first-term senator for Nebraska, and made that a very clear position. And for clear, principled reasons. There are a number of Republicans like that. But Ben, at the same time, isn't majority leader of U.S. Senate or Speaker of the House with responsibility, frankly, for a lot of other members who may or may not be in similar positions. That's what makes the political calculus so difficult for a guy like Paul Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the GOP members of Congress from Iowa. To my knowledge, none of them have jumped ship on the ship Donald Trump. Not Joni Ernst, not Charles Grassley, not Blum, not Young, and not King, Kelly Winfrey. Are you watching that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think it's been mostly silent from Iowa representatives on this issue. And I, you know, strategically, I think trying to stay away from it is probably a good idea, especially if they think they're in a relatively safe seat. But at the same time, I think it's an issue that, you know, people want to know, are you supporting this person? Because Trump is so divisive that, you know, support for him can say something to some people about what that candidate's actually like too. So I think we might hear something more from some of these, some of our representatives and senators before the election's over.
Doug Gross, of the, well, five of six of Iowa's members of Congress are Republicans. Of those five, would you guess in the coming week if one would jump ship on Donald Trump, or would you care to name which one you think it might be or two?
I don't think any of them will. I think that, first of all, you saw a registered poll over the weekend that showed that Donald Trump was ahead in the state. He's consistently been ahead in the state. And there's a very strong group of folks who support Donald Trump through thick and thin in Iowa. And that's a significant part of the Republican base and is critical for the reelection margin for every one of those candidates. And so I don't think you're going to see them disavowing. I think they're going to hope, like Kelly says, it goes away or they don't have to talk about it. But they're not going to disavow him.
Kelly, let me let you respond here, but let's listen, because it's right on point here. On Saturday, Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman, in fact, he'll be a guest on this program on Thursday, here he is criticizing Trump's 2005 comments, but defending the candidate.
So, folks, my message to you is quite simple. We've had a few rough spots. A few of us are a little bummed out right now, but you know what? We got a lot to fight for. We are going to fight for the next 4 weeks, period, and that's the message for our media.
Okay, Jeff Kaufman there speaking to Republicans. Doug Gross, there's the understatements of the year. A few rough spots, a little bummed out.
Well, Jeff is a very enthusiastic guy and is a great guy and has been a great party leader, is a great party leader for the Republicans in Iowa. And at the same time, Jeff's a professor of history, has a sense of where we are as a country, as a state, and what implications all this have in the long run. So he's torn and impacted by that. Yet again, his responsibility is to get Republicans elected. That's what parties are for. And he knows that if the Trump voters just sit at home, Republicans will lose all these down-ballot races. So he cannot not afford to simply walk away. What makes this all so even more interesting is that what's going to occur on November 9th may be as interesting as what happens on November 8th. Because either way, the Republican Party is going to have to reassess who it is and how it's going to move forward. Because if you have a group that you need in order to win elections, yet you don't agree with them fundamentally, you may have to reassess how your party's put together.
Mm-hmm. Kelly Winfrey, jump in there with you with the comment you wanted to make.
Oh, yeah. Well, a couple things. First is Doug had mentioned the Register poll that had come out. But I think we need to see what the next poll looks like, because that poll had Trump ahead by 4 points. But the margin of error was 3.5 points, and it was done before this latest controversy started with the tape. So I'm very curious to see what happens by next week when we have some new poll numbers in. But I think Doug's right in terms of the party needs to focus on who they're going to be. There's now a segment of the Republican Party that are very much Trump supporters and support policies that are inconsistent with what a lot of traditional Republicans support. And I think, this also demonstrates, this campaign demonstrates that, Republicans have had trouble with women voters and with some minority voters. So they need to figure out how they're going to, rework the party, rebrand themselves in a way that's appealing to a larger audience.
Mm-hmm. Before we have to go, tell us, how did Hillary Clinton do last night in your eyes, Doug Gross? Some are saying this morning in analysis that she missed an opportunity to KO Trump. Do you think that's the case?
I do. I do. I thought she, and this is what I thought was so sad about the debate, he was clearly a bully, leering, and incredibly on the attack mode. And she had an opportunity, frankly, to put him in his place. To sit the bully in a chair and tell him to act his age.
How would she do that on that?
Well, for example, when he tells her that she should be ashamed, she should look at him and say, I just heard, and the whole United States, the American people heard, why you should be ashamed, and you should forever be ashamed. And basically just put it right back to him. And I don't think she did that. And I thought on like the Abe Lincoln quote she said about her secret speeches to bankers, investment bankers in New York, and her responses on the emails, nothing was satisfying. And what she did is reinforce this sort of calculating politician motif that she's developed over time. And that made this, in my mind at least, this debate disappointing as well.
Kelly, do you agree that Clinton should have done better?
I think, I think she did a much better job than Donald Trump did in terms of talking about issues and being factually correct on those claims.
Well, that wouldn't take a lot.
Yeah, that's true. It does. The bar's
pretty
low.
Low bar.
but I do think, ideally, yes, she could have done something like that. I do think the fact that she's a woman and the fact that she's Hillary Clinton, if she gets to, like I'm the mom sitting the boy in the chair, that's not going to be viewed very positively by people either. So she has a difficult kind of line to walk in terms of what she can get away with and as far as putting Trump in his place. But I do think she could have done a better job of answering some of those other questions.
Okay, Kelly Winfrey, please stay in your place. We'd love to have you around for the second half hour. Assistant professor in the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University in our AIM studio. Doug Gross joining us by phone, attorney, former Iowa GOP gubernatorial nominee. Join our conversation, six words or less. Tell us what you heard in last night's debate, or join us with your question, 1-866-780-9100. Betty on our Facebook page says, Trump uncivil, liar, Clinton smart, strong. Leave your comment on our Facebook page. And we're talking about politics also on River to River today. I'm Ben Kiefer, midstream in River to River with Kelly Winfrey of the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University. Doug Gross, attorney, also former GOP Iowa gubernatorial nominee, giving us two Iowa perspectives on the presidential debate, the second of three last night. Also the fallout over the leaked video that leaked actually Friday created waves. Repercussions over the weekend, many GOP congressional members jumping ship on the Trump campaign. Also, Paul Ryan, we're hearing, will not campaign for Donald Trump, will not unendorse him. He will not campaign for Trump. He will not defend Donald Trump, and sort of giving other GOP congressional members the ability to do what they feel they need to do to hold on to their seat. Join our conversation. Six words or less, tell us what you heard or saw in last night's debate. Undecided voters, anything you saw change your mind? Our Facebook page there with that six-word challenge. A lot of disgust in our election season to be found there in many different creative words. Let's go to a part of the debate last night. Here is Donald Trump attacking Hillary Clinton on her email controversy.
And you get a subpoena. You get a subpoena, and after getting the subpoena, you delete 33,000 emails. And then you acid wash them, or bleach them, as you would say, a very expensive process. So we're going to get a special prosecutor, and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one-fifth of what you've done, and it's a disgrace.
Okay, that needs a PolitiFact checking. They rated the comment there that Donald Trump had half true, saying that while an employee did delete 33,000 emails after a subpoena for Benghazi-related emails, the FBI found no evidence that the emails were deleted deliberately to avoid the subpoena or other requests. Clinton's team now requested for the emails to be deleted, it seems, months before the subpoena came. They also argued that all the emails would be relevant to the subpoena had already been turned over to the State Department. And here is Hillary Clinton responding to those remarks, denying their truth, then finishing with a statement.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Okay, a bit of the raucous atmosphere last night. Kelly, this is a good point because I had to jump in there with a PolitiFact correction of Donald Trump. How did the candidates do with the facts last night? How much does it matter how they do with the facts in a debate like this?
He said a lot of things that were just factually incorrect and things that were half-truths. Certainly there were some things that Hillary, I think, as a more skilled politician, knows how to word things in a way that she's more honest, but maybe not talking about certain things like with Obamacare. But she certainly did a much better job with the facts. The whole email stuff is just, I think we're all so sick about her emails. Like, it's just, you know, if that's going to decide your vote, it already has. And it's just kind of repeating the same thing. And with the fact check you were just looking at, you know, Trump had gone on to talk about how she was acid washing emails or bleaching them. And it's just the fact checks, I'll say that's just not true. It was deleted with the software. Like, it's just kind of ridiculous in terms of amping up this this narrative about the emails to a point that just sounds like something on a soap opera.
Mm-hmm. Doug Gross, last half hour you said you criticized Hillary Clinton's performance, saying she could have done much better to deliver perhaps a knockout punch to Donald Trump. I wonder if you've heard this perspective, that it's perhaps better because we – on the weekend, right after the video, the 2000 video was leaked, there was a lot of talk about this campaign collapsing rather quickly and perhaps Trump needing to be replaced. Can't you argue from the Clinton campaign's perspective, it's better to have him staggering around the ring, to use that image, rather than possibly leave the ring and have Hillary Clinton face a fresh replacement? Doug, are you there? Okay, Doug Gross not there as well. Perhaps you can react to what I just said, Kelly, while we try to get Doug Gross back.
Yeah, I mean, I thought she did a good job answering the email question because she started off just saying, I made a mistake. I was wrong, and I take responsibility for that, which is something that, you know, Trump has yet to do with some of his mistakes as well. I think that she could have done a little bit better job in terms of the clarity and conciseness of some of her answers. You know, she spent a lot of time talking about how Donald Trump was not telling the truth, which that was true, but it really took away from her ability to land some sort of knockout punch in terms of demonstrating her knowledge of issues and what her policies would do for the American people.
Let's go to our phones. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Jim in Dubuque. Hi, Jim. Are you there? Jim is not there. Okay. Let's go to Fairfield. Rihanna. I hope I got your name right, Rihanna.
Yes. Yes, you've got my name right. I personally think neither of them should be president. I was seriously thinking of writing in my ballot none of the above. However, I think there is one particular really critical issue in this election, and that is the Supreme Court justices. And because that is a decision, whoever gets in is going to affect the country for years and years and years and years to come. And looking at the people that Donald Trump has suggested, many of which, some of which at least, really don't have a proper background in order to be a Supreme Court justice. And Hillary Clinton, you know, spoke about the present nominee that Obama tried to has suggested, and I've heard other people speak about her background, that person's background, and they would be a really valid and valuable addition to the Supreme Court.
And Merrick Garland, you're talking about, yeah, the nominee from.
I think it's really important for people to talk about the Supreme Court decision and the effect of that on the future of our country beyond whoever is going to be elected in this election, and
okay,
how important that decision is.
Thank you for your point, Rihanna in Fairfield. 1-866-780-9100. Doug Gross back with us. Sorry for whatever reason being cut off. Doug, you're back with us.
No problem. I'm cut off all the time. I'm a Republican.
I don't know how much of you heard of the question I asked. All of a sudden, you weren't there. But I was saying, to give it a short, in a nutshell, that the Hillary Clinton's performance perhaps could have been better, but had she delivered a knockout punch to Donald Trump, the collapse of his campaign right now is not perhaps the best thing that could happen for Hillary Clinton, and possibly she would face a replacement. Is that a possibility?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's even the remotest possibility. I think what he did last night made certain that she's not going to face someone else.
Right.
What he did is he shored up his base within the Republican Party. So the Republican leadership, even if they're scared for their political future, will never be able to replace him at this point.
Okay. Even a month away?
Nope.
Okay. Donald Trump has expressed that he does not want to quit. He's there till the end. Let's just say, theoretically, what would happen in the Republican Party? How versed are you on this, Doug Gross? If he did call it quits, what would happen?
Well, if again, you can, for death or disability, or if their declination, if the nominee decides they no longer want to run, the party executive committee can get together and nominate someone else. That's never happened, and I don't think it'll happen here either.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Jim is with us in Dubuque. I hope we have you this time. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I think it's interesting that CNN came out with a poll almost immediately after the debate and declared 57% for Hillary winning the debate and the remainder for Trump. What they didn't say is that 58% of the people that they polled out of 537 or something like that were Democrats. And the other remaining amount was a split of Republicans and independents or whatever. So I think those results are consistent with the majority of the other polls, which indicate that Trump won an overwhelming victory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have to watch out after these. A lot of people trying to influence opinion after a debate with online polls that don't necessarily reflect reality. Polls, even good ones, it's hard to find polls that reflect reality, Doug Gross, right?
Yeah, it's more difficult all the time. And we've got one here in Iowa, Ann Seltzer, who does the Bloomberg poll and does the Mediacom Register poll, who does really an outstanding job. Because what Ann does is she identifies likely voters that self-identify as likely voters, rather than trying to put your finger on the scale and try to modify it based on what the results you get from a random standpoint. So we could have a whole debate over just how polling should be done. But I think Ann does as good a job as anybody right now.
Mm-hmm. Last night, Donald Trump explicitly acknowledged for the first time during that debate that he used a $916 million loss that he reported in 1995 in income tax returns, those leaked three pages, to avoid paying personal federal income taxes of 4 years. Kelly Winfrey, it seems like that was the big bombshell from what last week, and we have so many bombshells landing in the media. This is almost an important point that gets lost.
Yeah, I mean, there's two possible narratives with this, though. You know, he says in the debate that he knows the tax code, so he's the one that's best able to change it. And the flip side is has clearly benefited significantly from the current system. So why would he actually change it?
And it was all legal. He says he's Doug Gross. He's simply taking advantage of the present tax law legally. Doug Gross, I'm guessing if you lost $916 million in a year, you would write it off as well, right?
Oh, yeah, if only we could make that kind of dough, huh?
Right.
Particularly be a successful businessman while you're doing it. I mean, that's what I think that's the story is Donald Trump has sold himself as a successful businessman, and he had a billion-dollar loss and hasn't paid taxes ever since. And we've got one state rep candidate, our House Majority Leader, running a TV ad, because his opponent hasn't paid taxes. So it's still a powerful thing when you don't pay taxes. I wouldn't underestimate the impact of it.
Mm-hmm. Also, last night we had the running mate, Mike Pence. Martha Raddatz pointed out that just a week earlier, Mike Pence appeared to contradict his own nominee on Syria, contradicted Donald Trump. Trump, in response, I guess he didn't seem to care much about what his VP thought. He said, "Oh, he and I haven't spoken, and I disagree." Kelly. that's a point worth talking about from the debate, isn't it?
It certainly is. You know, I joked last night that that's probably because Pence wasn't taking his phone calls right now. But it kind of demonstrates the lack of coordination that this campaign has, that he can't be on the same message as his VP. Now, having said that, it's not uncommon for a vice presidential candidate and presidential candidate to have certain, you know, differences in a campaign. But I think it really kind of shows that they're not talking to each other. There's not enough communication. There's not enough kind of clear plans with the campaign so that they can talk about the same things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought all the things that made Mike Pence a winner of the vice presidential campaign debate made Donald Trump a loser last night, because Pence sounded reasonable, measured, thoughtful, and all those things Donald Trump was not. And on this issue is very important, because the question was about how we should handle Putin and Russia in Syria, probably no more important foreign policy issue facing our world today. And on that score, not only did they disagree, they don't even talk to each other. I thought that, plus the prison comment, were the two most devastating pieces in this debate for Donald Trump. To have a candidate for President of the United States of America in 2016 threaten to put their opponent in prison if they win is unbelievable to me and disgusting. I mean, banana republics don't do that, and that was way over the top.
Mm-hmm. Here's back to Syria. Here's moderator Martha Raddatz asking Trump what should be done about Syria. As you pointed out, Doug Gross, a very important issue. Some issues did get talked about last night.
And I want to remind you what your running mate said. He said provocations by Russia need to be met with American strength, and that if Russia continues to be involved in airstrikes along with the Syrian government forces of Assad, the United States of America should be prepared to use military force to strike the military targets of the Assad regime.
Okay. He and I haven't spoken, and I disagree. I disagree.
You disagree with your running mate.
I think we have to knock out ISIS.
Okay, so that's exactly what you're talking about, Doug Gross. A disconnect, just not even talking about one of the biggest issues facing the next president.
Absolutely right. And it shows, I mean, what it demonstrates is lack of policy coordination, as Kelly indicated, on a very, very critical issue, and lack of preparation. So for people who want to be comfortable with Donald Trump as potentially the next president, it gives them a great deal of discomfort.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, you know, as you listen into Trump's answer to that question, and as he discussed nuclear weapons and Russia, he really demonstrated he doesn't know that much about foreign policy, to be honest, in terms of talking about Russia.
What do you mean, Kelly knows more than the generals?
I know, right? Yeah, apparently he just knows more than everyone else who's ever done any research on anything. So, but then again, that assumes the facts matter, and mm-hmm. they don't for everyone.
How would you, Doug Gross, as a political insider in the GOP, how would you size up, but looking at it from, I assume you're not inside, privy to things that perhaps are not in the press, but the relationship between Donald Trump and Mike Pence?
I never thought they had a close relationship. They come from two very different parts ideologically of the party. I mean, Mike Pence is a movement conservative, social conservative, one of the strongest leaders on that front over the course of the past several decades, really. And Donald Trump was a playboy in Manhattan. So they come from two totally different worlds. I was waiting to see whether or not maybe some of Pence would rub off on Trump and that he would, at least stylistically and in terms of studying the issues, but it doesn't appear that's the case.
Looks like we're only, I guess, 9 days away from the final presidential debate. Your expectations for that, Kelly Winfrey, given this tumult in the second debate?
Do we have to do it again?
that's six words. Hey, you can join our, yeah. our challenge.
I imagine it'll be more of the same. I mean, I don't expect there to be much difference in terms of the way that Trump behaves. And I think, you know, at best, maybe Hillary Clinton can land a knockout punch in the third debate. But I mean, you know, voting started, you know, we can vote now. So I don't know how much that final debate will impact anyone's decision for who they're going to vote.
And Doug Gross, that's also a reason why it would be difficult to replace Donald Trump, because how many people across the country have already cast early ballots, some for Donald Trump?
Right. Not only that, but I think the first debate always makes the greatest impact.
Yeah.
Because it's at that point where undecided voters are trying to decide, or soft voters are trying to make up their mind. And they watched that first debate, and that did have a lot of impact, and it hurt Donald Trump. I think while this debate made for good, you know, Sunday night football ratings, I suspect, I don't think it had that kind of electoral impact, and I think the third will have that much less as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the rest of the campaign as a whole, what you both are looking forward to, perhaps what questions you're looking to be answered in the final 4 weeks of this very, very long campaign. Doug Gross.
Well, I'll be interested to see whether or not there are more shocking revelations come out regarding Donald Trump. I would assume there are. There's 14 years of tapes for The Apprentice, for example.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't it make sense for any political party, the Democrats, of course, included, that they're saving some opposition research for the final weeks?
Sure. And usually the final week. I remember Al Gore and the Bush drunk driving incident up in Maine that came out like 2 days before, 3 days before the election last weekend. You'll have those sorts of things happen again. That's what I would watch for, these late surprises. But that being said, I think a lot of this is baked in right now. It's going to be very difficult to move the needle.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Kelly, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think I anticipate there will be more October surprises in terms of videos with Trump. There's reportedly, things that he said on camera during shootings of The Apprentice. So we'll see if that happens. But I think, you know, from really following Twitter last night, too, that people want to hear discussion of some issues in this last debate that we haven't heard so far, things like gun violence and education and college debt. So hopefully in the third debate we can get to more issues than we did in the first or in the second debate.
Doug Gross, are you willing to make any predictions of the down-ballot effect 4 weeks out of Donald Trump?
For short answer is no. But beyond that, I've been surprised thus far that there's been very little impact, at least on the reliable voting or polling that you see on these down-ballot races. It looks like most of the Iowa congressmen, the incumbents, are in good shape and will likely win handily. You would have thought, at least in both David Young's district and Rod Blum's district, that would be closer. Right now it doesn't appear to be that way. I think the U.S. Senate looks much better for Republicans than I would have anticipated at this point. So if there's going to be a break, it's going to have to occur right now. And so these next week of polls will tell you whether or not there's going to be a significant impact on down ballot. But right now it doesn't look like there will be.
Mm-hmm. And Doug, Kelly mentioned a few issues that should be talked about that aren't being talked about because of the controversies and the leaks and so forth. Are there issues that you really feel need to be discussed to have people make a more reasonable choice?
Yeah, for a state like Iowa, I'd like to hear a full-throated debate on trade and its impact on the economy. I mean, you might as well shut down Iowa if we don't have free trade. And if we don't approve the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or if we don't open up trade with the EU, and yet both of these candidates are saying, no, they don't want that, and they want to draw in our horns. And that would be, every time we've had a farm crisis in Iowa, it's been because we've restricted trade. So I would love to see a full-throated debate on trade that's based on facts, not just based on emotion.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, you see that too?
Yeah, no, I think that would definitely be something that people would be interested in hearing about. But I was going to comment too as far as how this will affect down ballot races. I think it depends on what turnout looks like. You know, if in presidential years, Democrats turn out to vote in higher numbers, and it's very possible that the things that Trump has said might motivate people to go vote that tend to vote Democrat. On the flip side, there are certainly Republicans that can't stomach Trump and might not vote for him at the presidential level, but will still vote Republican down ballot. So it really just depends, I think, on what turnout looks like.
Yeah, yep. I agree on that. And I think what the country really doesn't need is another Sean Hannity-Rachel Maddow debate like we had last night.
Yes.
Kelly Winfrey, assistant professor at the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University. Doug Gross, attorney, former GOP Iowa gubernatorial nominee. Kelly, Doug, really good to have your observations at this point in time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Help from Sean McClain today. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.